Safety First, TÜV SÜD's podcast on cybersecurity and more.
Hi everyone, welcome to TÜV SÜD's podcast on cybersecurity and more. Today's topic is industrial cybersecurity. As the IIoT is growing, so are the cyber threats. On a global scale, this is even more important as cyber attacks don't stop at national borders. Together with my colleague Ed Chandler from TÜV SÜD Americas, we take a closer look at this. Which standards are relevant for the industrial cybersecurity? How can they get harmonized on a global scale? And why are risk assessment and trainings so important? Welcome to the show. And hi, Ed. Glad to have you with us today.
Hello, Sabine. Thank you very much for having me.
Ed, what are the special challenges when it comes to industrial cybersecurity? How is it different from other security fields?
There's a lot of similarities, but there also are a lot of differences. At the end of the day, a network is a network. However, if you think about it, and you know, people are also people, but we might be speaking different languages, and that's very much the case when it comes to different types of IT networks. So IT networks, which is your traditional IT environment, things like computers, printers, servers, etc., they all utilize, you know, different types of protocols, but very similar things that our IT professionals tend to be very comfortable with. OT tends to use different types of protocols, different things that are in place. There are different regulations that go with, you know, specific types of OT. So dependent on what industries that people are in, can designate that there, you know, might be different regulations. An example of one here in the United States would be the power industry that has to follow a regulation called NERC-SIP, whereas banking has other specific types of regulations, such as FFIEC in the United States, which is much more focused on your traditional IT network. However, you know, the ideas and the concepts of securing the networks are similar, but how you do so might differ. The technologies that are available can be different, and there's a lot more of a wide variety available in your traditional IT security market. And we're starting to see a lot of companies in the OT security market start to pop up.
Are you talking about a national perspective now? Because there are, of course, several industries, there are several regulations, and they're not all alike, but there are also different markets and regions. So how about that?
That's a good point. I mean, different regions, different markets, you know, there are different requirements that come along with it. I used the example before of the power industry, which, you know, utilizes, you know, specific things. And a lot of these regulations are in place to help protect people from a safety perspective. Again, the same thing with IEC 62443 in the manufacturing departments with industrial control systems. Having these different regulations all over the place, it creates challenges for global companies. But if we have the ability to standardize them, in some cases they have been standardized, that definitely helps organizations with looking at, you know, securing the environments. But there are different needs based off of what the final product is in those OT environments.
So industry experts agree that it's not a question whether an organization will be attacked. This will happen sooner or later, but how fast it can recover. What are the main points to recover fast?
I would add one additional thing in there, actually. So it's how fast you can recover. And it's definitely not a question of if, but when. But additionally, I would like to add in there that it would make sense to also add how quickly can you detect it? And once you detect that something is going on, how do you minimize that damage? So anytime when an organization looks at how do I prevent or how do I recover from a cyber attack, there are really three things that every good cybersecurity program needs to have in place: people, processes, and technologies. When I say people, people need to be trained to be able to do their jobs appropriately and understand what it is that they're trying to protect and protect from. A good example, as most companies roll out cybersecurity trainings to all of their employees, we go through these regular annual trainings about, do I click on a link? Is this a trusted source? Very similar to that. And we need to train people based on the positions that they're doing, to be able to set ourselves up for success, because we don't want to create unnecessary vulnerabilities within a network, especially an OT network. Processes is the second one. And it's very important that you have good policies. Policies are actually, again, with the people, are just as important. You need to be able to understand, what do I do here? And it needs to be formalized within the organization. You also need to ensure that people understand what they should or should not be doing. In addition to that, it's just as important that we set up incident response plans. Incident response is always a policy that organizations struggle with. What do I do if something bad happens to me? And how do I react? So a lot of organizations will work towards creating an incident response plan. And this is a very common topic around any sort of cybersecurity framework, whether it is NIST or ISO 27001 or COBIT. Having a incident response policy is absolutely necessary.
Now we talked about people, technology, and the processes, but how do industry standards come into the play here?
Yeah, I mean, industry standards in general. So if we look at ISO 27001, they actually call out incident response. Having industry standards and frameworks are how organizations actually manage their risk. And it's important that they utilize a standard to be able to do so. You know, there's a lot of different standards out there. Some of them are national standards. Some of them are not national. Some of them are regional. Some of them are multiple within a region. NIST 800-171, which, you know, works with a specific subset within the United States of suppliers. ISO 27001 is the most globally utilized one. And that helps people create consistencies across the board.
As we just said, of course, cyber attacks don't stop at national borders. How can harmonization of these standards help? And how much harmonization is there already?
It depends on the supply chain, from what I've seen. There's harmonization and attempts at harmonization, obviously, through the International Standards Organization, ISO 27001 being, you know, the most popular global standard. But the problem and the challenge is that, you know, people want to be very specific. And if you look at like standards, and we'll look at an example within the automotive industry, and they've rolled out TSACs, or the payment credit card industry, with PCI DSS, they've rolled out their own individual standards. Sometimes these standards are based off of frameworks such as ISO 27001. Other times they're very prescriptive in how they go about it. And really what it comes down to is how the industry wants to react. The challenge that a lot of organizations find is that as they're trying to secure like a supply chain downstream, is that there's no industry standard for them. So then they try to create their own. And then you get a mishmash of different things, and it becomes challenging for suppliers to be able to manage that.
And which standards are actually relevant in the industrial IoT, and how can they comply with each other?
A lot of the standards and frameworks actually work very well together. So an example with an organization that has an IIoT environment, ISO 27001 is a good base framework and gets you a lot of the way there with some of the specific standards for IIoT environments. One of the ones that a lot of organizations are adopting right now, doesn't even matter what industry they're in. I've worked with organizations that have been in industrial control systems, and I've also seen organizations in, you know, the automotive industry adopt this for their IIoT environment, which is IEC 62443. It's a standard meant to help secure that type of system, or those types of systems and manufacturing processes.
Can you give us some concrete examples of customer use cases in the field of industrial cybersecurity?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at supply chains, and if you look at companies like Siemens or Rockwell Automation, what they're doing currently is they're taking IEC 62443 and making it a requirement for anybody who's supplying into their finalized products that they follow it. There's multiple sides of IEC 62443, but this allows them to ensure that when an organization is, you know, supplying in, that they're able to maintain that. And then when they pass it to their customers, their customers are also able to maintain that type of system based off of an industry regulation that is being run by organizations, you know, such as your Siemens and Rockwell Automation, who, you know, help create that.
So would you say that this is kind of state of the art right now, what they do?
Yeah, I mean, it's
of course it is, but
it definitely is state of the art, and it's outside the box thinking, and it's something that I think a lot of industries are starting to do. I've worked with many organizations trying to figure out how do we secure ourselves and how do we extend that security, you know, into our suppliers. As networks grow over time, you know, we open up ports for, you know, suppliers to be able to touch different parts of our system. We need to make sure that systems are being updated. And all of that, while good and can help secure these systems, it also creates vulnerabilities on their own. So organizations that, you know, haven't gone down that path and haven't worked to create this are really at a disadvantage.
How much time would it take them to close the gap? If I start from zero right now, what would it take me?
The biggest challenge is that you don't want to have people running in different fashions in different ways. So it becomes an organizational effort and an industry effort. So, you know, you want to be able to push this out together to ensure that, you know, people within the same industry who are trying to protect the same types of information are able to do so and secure it. A great example where this did not happen and then did happen in the past was with PCI DSS, which is a cybersecurity standard for credit cards. Mm-hmm. Initially, what happened there was Visa, MasterCard, American Express all had different standards. And those standards then being pushed down to anybody who was accepting cards were different from each other. And sometimes those differences created conflict, meaning that you could be compliant with American Express that would make you uncompliant with MasterCard. And it created a huge issue within organizations trying to do it. Not only did they have to go through multiple audits per year, but they had to manage the different audits and when they were occurring to ensure they were compliant. And it created a lot of overhead and a lot of frustration in the supply chain. So what they ended up doing, which was different and very revolutionary at the time, was all the card brands came together and they created a group. And that group was called the PCI SSC, which is the Payment Card Industry Security Standards Council. And they were the ones that actually initially, you know, brought this all together and created a standard that was acceptable by Visa, by MasterCard, by American Express, by Discover. All of the card brands then came on board with one specific standard. And that's how they were able to secure an industry that was inherently very risky, very insecure, and people were losing a lot of money due to it.
Yes, it's a very good example that shows how you can cooperate in an industry, although you are competitors. And I think TSAC is also a topic or a standard that was established recently and that got adopted very fast in the automotive supplier.
You're 100% right, Sabine. In its own way, it's very revolutionary, especially in a market that has not always had security on top of mind. To push something like TSACs out has made, you know, a lot of organizations change their methods and their thoughts. The only difference between PCI DSS and TSACs was TSACs is focused within the European sector, where, you know, in the U.S. sector, they use a standard called TPSIR, which is a use of a self-assessment questionnaire downstream within the supply chains. So TSACs took it to the next step, which made things a lot better. And I anticipate within the automotive industry that that will be the next step. But they took a huge step forward and it really revolutionized that entire market segment.
So TSACs is an initiative of the industry itself, but there are also regulatory bodies working on how to mitigate these differences and how can the industry benefit from that?
The biggest change that actually has occurred very, very recently in the United States, as an example, was that the SEC, the regulatory body that oversees publicly traded organizations, pushed out a requirement that the board members are now need to be aware of all cybersecurity concerns. And what this does is it forces them to fully understand what's happening about the cyber environment within the organization to be able to make proper decisions to best suit their customers, but also as well to help best suit their investors to protect them against cyber attacks. And why this is so revolutionary is, you know, historically you would have, you know, people that were in positions that would have, you know, a position in a high level position, but would have no budget and no power to be able to do anything. Because of this regulation and the way that the SEC has pushed it out, I anticipate that we see that cybersecurity really moves to the forefront. When it comes to other regulations, there's a huge wave going across the world right now on data privacy. Different countries are coming up with different ways of, you know, securing it. GDPR, which started in the European Union, was the grandfather of this. And It was the first major step forward in legislation that protected consumers from their information being, you know, misused or taken. This has now turned into a huge wave across the world because you have the U.S. that has implemented a few different privacy laws, CCPA for California. There's also one that's located in Virginia and Colorado. So the states individually within the United States are moving outward. Additionally, as I look across the different regions, some other major ones, one of those major ones is LPGA, which is a privacy standard based in Brazil. Again, if I look over in Asia, China just rolled out a major privacy effort. Again, if you look in the Americas, the region of Quebec is pushing out a major privacy effort. All of these countries, all the way across the world, including India, Singapore, are all pushing these efforts to ensure privacy and ensuring the protection of the data of the information they're taking. So seeing regulation come into play really has made people think about how they process information, how they take information in, how do they secure that information. This is all very, very good things, and I anticipate that we're not going to see this slow down anytime soon.
Well, super, Ed. Thanks so much for all these insights, for sharing this with us today, and for taking the time and being our guest.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Safety First is TÜV SÜD's podcast on cybersecurity and more. Audio production by Ikone Media.